According to Thoreau, the mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. Now, in your book, you talk about how we all are entitled to the freedom that comes from knowing and understanding our inner worlds. Can you tell us how psychoanalysis allows us to tap authentically into our inner worlds?
Well, I think that sometimes, somebody once said to me, you think that I come to therapy to hear what you have to say, but actually I don't. I come to hear what I have to say. And I thought that that was a very good summary of what actually happens in therapy, is that very often we do have the knowledge, the wisdom, the understanding, but it's buried because we're anxious, depressed, feel insecure, lacking in confidence. And if somebody facilitates one, bringing out to the surface what one might already intuitively know and supports one in that knowledge, and also maybe shines a light on a blind spot or in a corner where you're not in that moment thinking through the issues, I think that's some of what psychotherapy offers.
Okay. I guess just picking up on that quote as well, and something, a point that we make quite strongly in the book, is that everyone has issues. You know, Alfred Adler said that the only normal people are those that you don't yet know very well. And I guess as psychotherapists, we really get an insight into that because we hear people's stories. But I think all of us, you know, you don't have to be a psychotherapist to recognize that when you really start to talk to someone, you can get to see that underneath the surface, they're probably struggling just like you are.
But just to add to that, Steve, so if somebody were to say that to me, although I just do believe it's true that we go to psychotherapy to really dig around to see what we do really think and believe ourselves, but if we're thinking about it relationally, and Jackie and I are working with a relational psychotherapy of moving away a little bit from the more traditional psychoanalysis, one would think about why does the person perhaps not want to hear what the other person has to say, and that would become data or grist for the mill, because it might be that they're afraid that what you will say will be threatening or critical or difficult. And what does that relational style of not wanting to hear what the other has to say, what are the implications of that if they're enacting that outside of the room? Because in the relational mode, the sort of theory is that how you do the therapy in the room and the relationship in the room will to some extent be an indication of what you're doing outside of the room, and you can use that information to see where you might be blocking your opportunities or inviting hostility. And so the relationship itself becomes part of what one looks at in the psychotherapeutic field.
According to a father of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud, human beings are compelled by unconscious forces that are repressed from memory. Now, the term unconscious, it's quite a nebulous term to a lot of people. On the back of the book, you have this great Carl Jung quote, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Now, as analysts, how do you define the unconscious and how do you find ways to access it in something that doesn't function according to a sort of rational definition?
Okay, well, I think that there are many different definitions of the unconscious, but the one that we would be thinking about is what might be called the procedural unconscious, which, and I'll explain that. So we're looking a lot at nurture, and we're looking a lot at attachment theory, and we're looking a lot at how you internalize a working model of how to be with another person from your very early years. So you might find that if you say something critical or negative toward your mom or dad, you get a very hostile response. So you soon learn that the way to be with the other person is to conform to them or to shape yourself to please them. That will then become embedded as a working model, and you won't be aware of the fact that that's what you're enacting. So that would be one way of looking at the unconscious. And there are many different ways of looking at the unconscious, but that would be the one that I think we are focusing on more so.
And in looking at that in psychotherapy, you know, we would be hoping that through the relationship in the therapy, you'd be able to reveal some of those unconscious forces and help people to be more aware of them. And I guess that's what brings us to, you know, another facet of our being and of one of the goals of psychotherapy, which is freedom of choice, that it's only when we can be conscious of something that we can make free choices about how we act out of it or whether we act out of it.
And Steve, maybe I can add to that, because I think the quote that you gave to us, and I want to honor that quote, which would be more the Freudian unconscious, mm-hmm. which would be what we might call the dynamic unconscious. I mean, Freud saw us as really driven by sex and aggression. And I think we can't gainsay the fact that our sexual drives and our aggressive drives are very much part of us. And he would see that those are disruptive forces within us, and they're not particularly rational. So he would be looking at that particular aspect of how we're disrupted by inner forces within ourselves. Mm-hmm. We are then taking that and looking at, but how is your sexuality, your aggression, and very much else shaped in terms of its expression through the experiences that you're having, not just in the family, but school, the atmosphere of the time? Because I think Freud's zeitgeist, if you like, or atmosphere was sexual repression, whereas ours is sexual expression, and whether you've expressed it enough or with sufficient
how
variety.
Now, what I found interesting in your book is the way in which you use case histories to drill down into the lives of your many patients to attempt to access what is actually the actual source of their personal distress. Now, this can often be quite different from what would be the sort of so-called symptoms that sort of bubble to the surface. So as practitioners, how do you penetrate the mask or the persona we individuals put on, you know, because we all kind of do that to prevent people from perceiving uncomfortable details about our lives?
Yes, of course. I mean, we all have personas. And beyond that, in fact, we all have what we would refer to as many self states. They're kind of different aspects of ourself that we inhabit in different situations. And, you know, hopefully we're able to do that quite flexibly, and we can have the appropriate self state, if you like, or persona for the appropriate situation. I guess therapy opens up a space, though, for people to sort of drop down into what it is that they're feeling right in that moment, or what thoughts might be crossing their mind in that moment. And because of the nature of how therapy is constructed, it's a very intimate setting. It's done over time. There's a strong, ideally, a strong relationship that builds between the therapist and the patient. And all of those things kind of facilitate the unearthing, I guess, of aspects of the person that they wouldn't necessarily demonstrating in their job or talking about to their neighbor. We would be trying to get people in touch with their vulnerability. And as Jill mentioned earlier, a lot of the work that we do is also trying to observe what's happening in the room, what's happening between me and the patient that might give me some clues, some hypotheses that I can have about what it is that they struggle with, and how can I communicate that to them in a way that allows them to firstly sort of modulate my hypothesis and secondly gain greater insight into their own way of being.